listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Welcome to Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly. This is your weekly podcast looking at all the major stories from Spain, Germany, Italy, France and more. My co-host is Chris Parrott.
Yep, derby day across Europe. A 16-year-old played in goal for AC Milan. Aubameyang, Suarez and Kaut all scored hat-tricks. David Moyes picked up a massive win. There were free beers at Bayern and there's another new name at the top of Serie A.
We speak to European football reporter Steve Crossman, who is at the big Lisbon derby this weekend. And football journalist Elliot Rothwell joins us to discuss Fenerbahce against Galatasaray and if Robin van Persie has lost it.
This is Football in Europe.
Thanks for downloading the latest edition of the podcast. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes if you do enjoy listening to the show. Charlie Barca, a supporter of our show for a long time.
Supporter of Barca as well.
Yeah, good point. Supporter of both, left us a nice review on iTunes. It helps us go up the charts as well. So if you don't mind leaving one of those, that'd be great. Chris, I was at a League of Ireland game on Friday.
Ooh.
Yes.
The big one.
The big one. St. Pat's against Sligo.
Okay.
Sligo won 2-0, and it was a result that kept them, effectively keeps them up. But even more interesting was I was sat behind the dugout, and I went with my mate Collie, and I went, is that Mickey Adams? Mickey Adams is manager of... Did you know that?
No, to be honest, I hadn't thought about Mickey Adams for a while.
Get thinking.
Well, he doesn't normally pop into my brain, but that is a surprise. He's had a slightly strange career, hasn't he?
Are you on Wikipedia right now?
Yeah, he seems to have managed everybody. Like, I mean, Fulham, Swansea, Brentford, player managers. Little spell at Forest, and then Brighton, Leicester, Coventry, Brighton, Port Vale, Sheffield United, Port Vale, Tranmere.
Oh my God.
Sligo, his last two clubs have both been Rovers.
Chris, before we get going into actual football,
yeah,
a weird story involving Carlo Ancelotti and how he's going to be a movie star.
Well, yeah. One of these, I'm not sure whether to believe it, actually. Apparently he's going to be in Star Trek. As some cameo appearance of some sort of
how do you crowbar in Carlo Ancelotti into it?
Honestly, no idea. But apparently, because he knows an actress and he was filmed it when he was on his sabbatical in Vancouver. I've never seen Star Trek. And actually, well, I would see it if he was in it. But it's kind of annoys me, Star Trek.
Why? Why?
I mean, I can't say that because I haven't seen it, but it's... It's just so unrealistic, isn't it?
Yeah, but all sci-fi is unrealistic. Well, what do you want?
No, I put... yeah, exactly. I don't
Oh,
like
you're not
sci-fi.
Having any sci-fi?
No. But I just... I'll believe it when I see it, if Ancelotti is in it. By the way, I follow him on Twitter, and he seems like he's having the time of his life.
Well, we'll see.
Salmon fishing. Basically, salmon fishing. And he keeps on saying, oh, there's another salmon to catch. He's just... Like, why would you bother being... he obviously made a lot of money, been very successful. Mm. I could take salmon fishing for a year.
Well, I suppose, you know, he might be quite suitable for this film because having been Real Madrid manager, he knows what it's like to try and cling on to his job.
Yeah, see, that's why I don't like Star Trek, because those sort of
but
things
do you get the joke? I mean, I was worried you weren't going to get the pun.
No, I get the pun.
Oh, that's fine.
I get the pun. Don't never explain a pun either.
Oh, God. We'll leave that in. It'll be fine, won't it?
Yeah.
Let's start with Spain.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
I like how... Our stings, I think, must wake people up.
They wake me up when your headphones are in a little bit too loud.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Phil, thanks for voicing those over. And big game in La Liga this weekend, a meeting of the top two, Chris. Surprise package. Celta Vigo losing their unbeaten record as Real Madrid also unbeaten. Got a 3-1 win away from home.
Yeah, a hugely impressive result. Remember, Celta Vigo thumped Barcelona at home a couple of weeks ago. And Rafa Benitez's Real Madrid were too good for them. Ronaldo scored, as ever. Danilo and a very late Marcelo third after Nolito had got one back. Absolute cracker of a goal. Linked with Arsenal. Says he's only interested in a move back to Barcelona, his former club. It's always interesting when a team like Celta does well very quickly.
How quickly your players get picked off.
How quickly your players get picked off. Whereas if you're an Atletico, you can keep hold of them now. But yeah, Celta Vigo had a great season so far. But I think that's a really... terrific result that for Benitez and Real Madrid. It was billed as a test. As I mentioned, Celta thrashed Barcelona at home and they passed it emphatically.
Chris, I did see this game and what was most notable, and certainly from Emiliano Butragueño, talked about it afterwards, and Nolito, mentioned it as well, how good Keylor Navas was. He made some unbelievable saves.
He did, yeah. And I'm not sure he's got enough credit, actually, for the way he's played. You know, how in the first few podcasts we just spoke about David De Gea. Or actually, we didn't, because it was just... We got bored of it. Everyone did. But he didn't go. And they've got a goalkeeper in Keylor Navas who's been absolutely fantastic. And for all of Real Madrid's attacking players, their defence has been excellent. So much so that people have called Rafa Benitez negative. But I'm not sure how you can call someone negative when they're top of the table. They went away to Paris Saint-Germain and drew 0-0. I find it very difficult to criticise Benitez.
What I'm worried about as well is that Rafa Benitez wouldn't give Keylor Navas too much credit after the game. He said it was a team performance and not Navas that won it. But this is a trait with Rafa Benitez players. He tends not to pick out individual stars.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that Steven Gerrard in his book says that, doesn't he, about Rafa Benitez not being the most personable coach.
Yeah.
But maybe each coach has their own way. I agree, and I think if it was Ronaldo on this form...
But you've got to praise Navas. I mean, you've got to pick him out after this display. Keylor Navas outstanding as Real Madrid beat Celta Vigo 3-1. Chris says, we're getting close to a Clásico, Real Madrid-Barcelona, November the 21st. This is when the media in Spain start going a bit bonkers and the crazy stories have already started.
Yeah, they have. A linesman who could potentially be one of the officials claimed he was asked a favour. Real Madrid over Barcelona. He's requested anonymity because of fears over possible reprisals. Made a formal complaint through a lawyer to the anti-corruption investigation magistrate in Barcelona. It's a remarkable story. Whether or not it's true, as you mentioned, things go a bit mad when El Clásico comes around for the weeks leading up to it. And that, of all the stories about El Clásico in recent years, has to be right up there. It's an allegation, but it's a very worrying one.
Also, Las Palmas sacked their manager Paco Herrera last week, the former Liverpool assistant manager with the team bottom of the league. They drew 0-0 with high-flying Villarreal under new coach Quique Setién, so a decent result there. Chris, Sevilla, after a cruel late blow of losing to Manchester City in the Champions League, they beat Getafe 5-0. A great response from Unai Emery's men. Gamero with a hat-trick. Sevilla awarded 3 penalties in one game for the second time this season. Gladbach in the Champions League. They are the very odd. Chris, let's get on to Barcelona. What happened in that game? Because it's been a notable week for them.
Yeah, it has. They won. They beat Eibar by 3-1. They fell behind. That doesn't happen very often. A Luis Suarez hat-trick, though. A comfortable win. The equaliser was... We mentioned about Dortmund and it ending up as a tap-in, but the move to create that space and create that chance was brilliant, and Suarez doesn't miss from that close. Mascherano sent off, though, for dissent late on. Straight red card for dissent. And that means that he said something rather naughty.
Well, if people want to look up what he supposedly said...
We definitely can't broadcast
it. It's the worst word you can say.
But, you know, it's often a yellow card for dissent, isn't it? When it's a red card... you have to ask questions. And particularly when you're 3-1 up.
Why are you saying stuff?
Just don't get involved.
But PK did the same. I mean, they were losing to Bilbao earlier in the season, but PK got sent off for bad language as well. I mean, get the bar of soap out and wash their mouths out at Barcelona.
Yeah, well, and also it's another blow at the bat. They haven't kept a clean sheet in 7 La Liga games
now. Because he's suspended now.
Yeah, because he'll be suspended. It was an emotional day, of course. Johan Cruyff diagnosed with lung cancer last week. A Barca legend as a player and as a coach, led them to their first European Cup as a coach in 92 at Wembley, and they all came on with orange shirts, hoping for a speedy recovery. It was nice to see. He's missed the Barcelona. Okay, he's done brilliant things in Holland as well, but in Barcelona he is adored, and it was nice to see that they all came out to give him his support.
And Chris, I know you're a big fan of the selfie.
A huge fan.
There was a notable selfie moment in the Barcelona game.
Yeah, I think this is one of the big differences of modern day football. Someone ran onto the pitch, and it, you know, in the olden days that might have been a hooligan or
get naked.
No, selfie with Neymar
during the game.
Just, I mean, that takes some doing. That is, and instead of, you know, them, you know, it was just a very normal looking bloke who's just ran onto the pitch mid game and asked Neymar for a selfie.
Atletico beat Valencia 2-1, and a big result as well for David Moyes this weekend.
Yeah, because had he lost to Levante, I think he really would have, his job would have been on the line, because they were the team third bottom, keeping Real Sociedad out of the relegation zone, and they won 4-0 away. Terrific that for David Moyes. And a word on Atletico as well. They're just starting to really go, I think. Another goal for Jackson Martinez, one for Yannick Ferreira Carrasco. Two of their summer signings taking a little while to bed in, but they are right up there, just 2 points behind Real Madrid and Barcelona. You mentioned Sevilla, that win. They're also starting to fire, but Atletico look like they're going to make it a three-horse title race again.
And Marca backing that up as well with an editorial piece that you've picked out.
Yeah, editorial piece basically saying that it took a while. It was a big summer of investment, and there were questions early on because he wasn't playing a lot of the players.
He wasn't playing almost any of the big money signings. Yeah.
But they've started to come in, and okay, they were beaten by Benfica in the Champions League on match day two, but they're just beginning to look like their old self. And we've mentioned it before, but I think it's fantastic for Spain. For the first time in my lifetime to have consistently a third team, consistently challenging Real Madrid and Barcelona. And Atletico have done that for the last few years now, and certainly this season it looks the same.
Real Madrid top, plus 18 goal difference. Defensive, really?
Immense.
21 points along with Barcelona, 21 points. Atletico 19, Celta Vigo down to fourth in 18. So that's how things are in La Liga. Over the border, meanwhile, a huge game of the weekend, the Lisbon derby, Benfica against Sporting. This game especially big because Jorge Jesus, the former manager of Benfica, switched clubs. He went to Sporting in the summer. And on Sunday night, having attended the game, I spoke to journalist Steve Crossman about what happened on Sunday.
This is Football in Europe.
Last night, I spent the evening with some of the Sporting Ultras, one of their four Ultras groups, and they said that for them, it was the biggest derby for about 50 years. And it's hard to put you can't really put an exact date on anything, I suppose. It's very subjective, but it's because of the fact that, you know, it's not just that Jorge Jesus won so many titles with Benfica, it's the fact that he was their longest serving post-war manager. And no manager ever in history, even a manager who'd been there for 2 months, no one in history has ever gone between the two teams. So that's a big part of why it's been built up so much. But the other thing is the two clubs and the current situation, which is, you know, in many ways is ludicrous. You know, you've got Benfica are suing Jorge Jesus at the moment for 14 million euro. Whether or not that will come to anything, we'll wait and see. But part of that is to do with software theft, is one of the things that he's been accused of. And then on the other side of things, you know, I got an email last night from Sporting saying, you know, you can talk about this. This is our official position. Bruno de Carvalho, the president of Sporting, has called for Benfica to be relegated because he has alleged that they've been involved in bribing referees, and not bribing referees with money, but he basically went on a talk show here in Portugal recently with a box, and he said this is what Benfica are doing, and he opened the box, and apparently what he's suggesting they have been doing is giving tickets to referees, coupons for free dinners, free posh expensive dinners. So you can see why everything that's happened has made this a very unique Lisbon derby. So for Sporting to turn up and win the game so well is absolutely massive for them.
I didn't realise the situation had gone so crazy with the whole thing. But I mean, I think some people won't know what happened in the summer. So would you mind taking people back to the reason that Jorge Jesus left Benfica to go to their city rival Sporting?
Well, it's interesting. Basically, the general consensus is that Benfica had made the decision, and many people say it's a strange decision, that after Jorge Jesus had won 10 cups in the space of 4 years, when, you know, he took over at Benfica, people might not remember that Benfica were not going through a very good period in their time. You know, Jorge Jesus is kind of regarded as a little bit of a joke by some people at the time. He speaks in a strange way, you know, even his Portuguese isn't perfect, and people tended to kind of poke fun at the way he spoke. They don't poke fun at him anymore. And Benfica seemed to have made the decision that they didn't want him to be their coach anymore, but they didn't want him to stay in Portugal, and that is the key thing. Jorge Jesus, by the looks of it, never had any intention to leave. So, you know, I was with the sporting president a couple of days ago, Bruno de Carvalho, and he said as soon as they got wind of the fact that Benfica didn't want to keep this guy, you'd had such an amazing time there and won so many trophies, they thought, well, you know, why not make him our coach? And again, the general opinion is that it was down to money. But one of the things Bruno told me, which I don't think he's said before, is that at the last moment, Benfica realised that it was happening, that he was going to Sporting.
Right. Yeah.
And Bruno says, and I should say Bruno says is a big thing to say in Portugal, I'm not saying this is the truth. I'm saying this is what the Sporting president said to me. He says that Benfica made Jorge Jesus a better offer, i.e. more money than what he was offering, but he'd already made the decision. And, you know, Jorge Jesus has a history with Sporting. His dad played for them. He was here as a youngster as well. So that's kind of the backstory. And, you know, Bruno is a guy who has a way with words. And the way he put it to me was, Benfica came to a road. They didn't look left and right, so they didn't see me coming.
So what I'm interested in as well is, what was the reception for Jesus back at the Estadio de Luz?
Oh, it was awful. Absolutely terrible. I thought the worst it would be is when he walks out onto the pitch. But it actually, before then, the PA announcer, who's, by the way, mood darkened with every goal that went in over the course of the day. He was very excited at the start of the game. That didn't last. He read out the Sporting team. And in Portugal, at the end, when they read out the team, they also say the name of the manager. He said the name Jorge Jesus. And it was just absolute pandemonium in the stands. You know, I was looking down at the pitch after about 10 minutes, and the technical area of Jorge Jesus was littered with, you know, bits of paper and all kinds of stuff that the fans had just thrown at him from behind him, where you looked at the other technical area and it was completely clear, pristine, clean. So, I mean, he got a terrible reception, but you can't be surprised by that. I mean, even Benfica fans that I've spoken to here have said, you know, we've got great respect for what he did for us, but that has to go completely out the window. You know, this is not a friendly rivalry. There are lots of European football rivalries where maybe the sets of fans don't hate each other. That is not the case here. A couple of years ago, Sporting fans, you know, set fire to part of the Benfica stadium. It is a derby with a ferocious feeling to it. And there is a reason nobody has done in the past what Jorge Jesus has done here and moved directly between the two teams as a manager.
And in the end, there was a football match that Sporting won 3-0. I mean, how did they do it? Was it as comprehensive as it might look?
Well, it wasn't really a football match at all. I mean, they just walked it. I actually think that Sporting were more impressive in the second half than the first half. It was 3-0 at half-time and it finished 3-0. Because Jorge Jesus' style, you know, lots of people will inevitably compare him to Jose Mourinho. He couldn't be less like Jose Mourinho on the pitch if he wanted to be. There is a gung-ho attacking style there, and you need the players to do that, and Bruno de Carvalho has bought the players to do that. You know, Islam Slimani's header for the second goal was an incredible header. Julio Cesar, the Benfica goalkeeper, had very few saves to make in the game, actually. It was just the finishes from Sporting, apart from the first goal when Cesar made an error, were absolutely sterling. But in the second half, it was just the way that they just kept the ball. You know, William Carvalho, I know everybody knows who he is. It's the first time I've seen him up close. Sporting fans call him Sir William because everything he does, there's just a sense of class about. So they say he like seems like he should be named Sir William. And he was outstanding. He gets the ball in positions and you think, OK, well, you've taken too long here. You're going to give the ball away. And he doesn't. And he holds on to it and he finds a pass that even from, you know, right up in the gods of the stadium, you can't see. And he sees it. So Sporting looked better as a, you know, an attacking force in the first half, but in the second half they looked like champions, and that is saying something because they haven't won a title in many a year, and that's what this result is. It's a massive statement. I said to Jorge Jesus after the game, you know, Bruno de Carvalho keeps talking about what a great coach you are. Is he right? And he said, my results so far back that up, and you have to say they do.
So what now? Are people talking about them being the favourites for the title? Because, of course, there's Porto as well challenging.
Well, it was a perfect day for them because Porto drew their game. So Sporting have gone top of the table. People are definitely talking about Sporting as potential champions, but I wouldn't say favourites, even though they've gone top today. I think people look at the look at the massive investment that Porto have made over the summer, it's very hard to look past them as favourites for the title. But at the same time, you know, forget about the players that you've signed. There is the Jorge Jesus factor, and it is a factor. And, you know, we're talking about a guy who knows exactly what it means to win a title here. He knows exactly how to do it. He hasn't changed his style. He still manages in exactly the same way, just with different players. And, you know, it's hard for me to say because I haven't seen Porto this season in person. Obviously, I know about the players that they've brought in, and you see some of the results that they've had, but Sporting won't be considered favourites for a while yet. They would have to play Porto and maybe come up with a kind of result that they've come up with against Benfica. But you have to put it in context. Benfica hadn't lost a home game in the league for 3.5 years before today. They hadn't lost a home game in the league by this margin for 7.5 years. And Sporting did it seemingly without breaking sweat.
And mate, did you get to enjoy your last night in Lisbon, or what's the plan now? A bit of Fardo, a beer, or what? What was going on?
Well, I was going to go out and have a beer, but then, of course, I got the call from you.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought I'd better get back to the hotel. Now, I did experience some Fardo. For those who don't know what Fardo is, it's generally referred to as the Portuguese blues. But if you call it the Portuguese blues to a Fardo singer, as I discovered, you will be severely reprimanded because it's like this game. You shouldn't call this game the Portuguese Clásico. You shouldn't compare it to another fixture. You can't compare Fardo to anything. But the Fardo singer I spoke to last night is a massive Sporting fan. When I came into his restaurant, he said, "Oh, that's Steve. He's come from the BBC. He's come to talk to me about the game later." This is an entire restaurant he's talking to. He said, "I'm a Sporting fan. My wife is Sporting. My daughter is Sporting. My cat is Sporting." So, yeah, he will right now be singing about loss and kind of desperation, but probably inside he's thinking something different.
This is Football in Europe, Serie A Roundup.
And a big thanks to Steve Crossman for joining us on the podcast, telling us about Benfica nil, Sporting 3. Some excellent insight there. Chris, let's move on to Serie A now, a meeting of two of the top three teams in the league at the weekend.
Absolutely, and another leader in Serie A. It's such an open title race of Juventus, nowhere near where they were the last couple of years. Roma now top after a 2-1 win at Fiorentina. Mo Salah against his former side got them off to the perfect start. Jovinho made it 2 on the counter-attack before half-time. A very late goal from Babacar, but great win for Roma. 2 points separate the top 5 in Italy. It's so tight.
And Mo Salah was the main talking point. He was sent off late on as well, and he's not popular at all in Florence.
He was always going to be the main talking point. So he joined Fiorentina on loan from Chelsea last season. Was brilliant for Fiorentina. There was a possibility clause for another year. Fiorentina said, "Yep, thanks, we'll have you for another year." He got his head turned by Roma in the summer. They're still in wranglings, legally-wise, but he went to Roma, didn't go to Fiorentina, was booed throughout, got 2 yellow cards, a second for dissent to get sent off. It looked a little bit soft, but scored a brilliant goal after 6 minutes. It was always going to be about Mo Salah, and the fact that he came up trumps in terms of what he did on the pitch just made it even better to watch, to be honest.
An exceptional goal. People would have seen a 16-year-old playing in goal for AC Milan this weekend. Chris, this was all over Twitter as they got themselves a win.
Yeah, Donnarumma. 16, but 6'5". He didn't look 16, believe me.
He's huge.
What's he eating?
I don't know. I saw him in pre-season and he played in a friendly against Real Madrid and he looks absolutely petrified.
And it was one of those that wasn't due to injury or anything like that. He was picked. He was chosen ahead of Lopez. Sinisa Mihailovic made the call. He was born in 1999, Rob. Makes you feel very old.
Well, I'm scared that when we get the first 2000.
Yeah, well, it won't be long, particularly if characters like him come around. Not quite the youngest ever Milan player. That's Paolo Maldini, only by a few days. That was back in 1985, Maldini's debut, 14 years before Donnarumma was born. He actually got beaten from a free kick, which...
You were critical of him. You said he should have saved it.
Well, he did one of those things goalkeepers do when they set their wall and they take a giant, giant step one way and can't get back to keep it out. It was a great free kick in fairness, but a big win for Milan, actually, because they've been woefully out of form. Pressure on Mihailovic, but they beat Sassuolo, high-flying Sassuolo at home.
What were you doing when you were 16? I mean, think back. He's playing in goal for AC Milan, one of the best teams in the world. What were you up to?
So little in comparison.
Just hanging around... I was around Colchester Leisure Centre.
I think I was playing knock and run.
Still? In 16, that's a bit old.
Oh, we went up to 18 in the Suffolk countryside.
Let's move on to Napoli, Chris. They are the in-form team at the moment, and they got another win. Who did they play and what was the score?
Well, they're excellent. Gonzalo Higuain got the goal. They won away at Chievo. They really are absolutely banging form. They're now up to second, just 2 points behind Roma. They've beaten some big sides recently. Narrow win at Chievo, but they keep on going under Sarri, who he actually said apparently to Gonzalo Higuain, if you want to be one of the world's best strikers, you can't be lazy. Something along those terms. And it's certainly made Higuain, who was good last season, even better. And I mean, we had Adam Summerton on the podcast a couple of weeks ago tipping Napoli for the Scudetto. They and Roma are the two outstanding teams in Italy at the moment.
Paulo Dybala scored for Juve in a 2-0 win against Atalanta, as did Mario Mandzukic. Roma, though, are top of the table now by 2 points. Chris, a quick one on Liga in France. I was really disappointed with Paris Saint-Germain against Real Madrid. I think that was an opportunity to get a big win against Rafa Benitez's side, considering their injuries. So how did Paris Saint-Germain, after that 0-0 draw, get on in Liga?
Well, back domestically and back winning. They're 7 points clear, Rob. They hammered Saint-Étienne 4-1, who actually, with Lyon and Marseille not playing well, Saint-Étienne are the biggest team up there, if you like. And they were blown away. Kozawa got his first for the club. Cavani, Ibrahimovic and Lucas Moura scored as well. Own goal from Marco Verratti. Saint-Étienne couldn't even score on their own. They're 7 clear. It got even better because Caen lost and Angers drew, those two surprise teams who were second and third. And you just wonder if the title is already over, frankly, in France. And how do you keep your team motivated away from the Champions League? I don't know. I think that's a consideration for Laurent Blanc. But just looking at the table, Paris Saint-Germain, 9 wins from 11 games, 29 points, 7 clear of Angers in second, Caen in third, a point behind, and then Lyon up to fourth after a victory. There are 19 points, so that's already 10 points behind Paris Saint-Germain.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
10 wins in a row for Bayern to start the season. They beat Köln 4-0 at home to secure their 1,000th Bundesliga match win, Chris.
Yeah, and a rather hilariously attacking lineup from Pep Guardiola. I saw, as soon as that match at Arsenal had finished last week, Twitter was full of German journalists saying, oh, poor old Köln, just because you knew there was going to be
reaction.
Oh, they
knew they were going to get hammering. Right.
Pep Guardiola's side, or Bayern, don't lose two in a row. Pep Guardiola's sides don't lose two in a row. This was the 11. Rob Neuer, Rafinha, Boateng, Alaba, okay. Vidal.
There's some defenders.
Lahm, Robben, Müller, Koeman, Costa, Lewandowski.
How did he even... I don't even know how he played a system there.
Well, attack. But if I turned up as a Bayern fan, and you know, sports about entertainment, ultimately, you would be pretty excited walking into that ground being like, well, we're definitely going to score. Yeah, and they kept the clean sheet with the team as well.
And Arjen Robben made a return. He's been out for a couple of months.
Yeah, injured on international duty with the Netherlands. It's blighted his career, hasn't it? I think you might be talking about Robben as one of the... Well, on his day, he is one of the best players in Europe. But had he not been injured, maybe, who knows what he might have achieved. He's won anyway. But maybe you'd be talking about one of the best Dutch players. Worrying for Arsenal that he is back. Scored, as you mentioned. It was a teed up to him on a plate, but a nice little finish. Lewandowski scored. Müller scored a penalty. And Vidal, who I think has fitted into that Bayern side very well since his transfer. So they bounced back really well from that Arsenal loss. I'd expect to see a very different Bayern side in Munich next week. And Arsenal might not have it all their own way.
And the fans who travelled to the Allianz Arena, they got a treat, because Bayern achieved the first team to ever win 1,000 Bundesliga games.
Yeah, free beer. I do love Bayern. Like, the way the ticket price protest at Arsenal, and the club does things like this consistently. Free beer. I'd be a Bayern fan.
They put it up on the big screen. I mean, can you imagine the cheer? I would go more mental for that than a goal.
Yeah, everyone just leaves. They always celebrate. Oktoberfest is obviously in Munich. They always celebrate their league titles with those... No champagne, just litres of beer. I'd take that, definitely.
Oh, you'd take being a Bayern player, would you? As opposed to being with me recording this.
It's good, but yeah, you're just about.
Ribery says he hopes to be back before Christmas too, so Bayern's options improving. Bayer Leverkusen, you may have seen, drew 4-4 in the Champions League last week against Roma. They scored 2 late goals to earn a draw. And a 4-3 win over Stuttgart this weekend, Chris. They're turning into the great entertainers of the Bundesliga.
They are. I think Roger Schmidt's built a very attacking side. They had to come from two goals down again. All seven goals in the second half. That can't have happened very often. They're up to sixth into a European place. It was Memedi with a very late winner, 89 minutes in. And what, I mean, eight goals followed by seven goals and not 15 goals in a week.
Watching the cogs turn in your head to work out the numbers was hilarious.
It's early. It is early. But but yeah, a brilliant win. And I really like the way Leverkusen play.
And Roger Schmidt has been mentioned as a potential to take over from Pep Guardiola should he depart, as many expect, at the end of the season. Dortmund returned from Azerbaijan and a 3-1 win over Kabala in the Europa League for a 13th win in 17 matches this season. And they won again at the weekend, 5-1 against bottom-placed Augsburg. Aubameyang, Chris, scoring his second hat-trick in 4 days. I mean, this guy is just unreal at the minute.
He is, and it's the sides issue, if you like, of, you know, it's Messi v Ronaldo every season for top scorer. Well, it's Lewandowski against Aubameyang, 13 goals.
And Jamie Vardy,
yeah, very good point. In the European Golden Shoe Award. But yeah, it's 13 goals, extraordinary. And the way that Dortmund are playing at the moment, it's almost like Barcelona, when they just cut sides open and it ends up being a tap-in. But the move before, it's been immense.
You're right. They're playing the final third is different to Klopp. It's like this. You're up against a flat back four with a bank of four midfielders, and they can a little cut into a full back break around the back and they can score.
Yeah, astonishing. I mean, Aubameyang has been the lead man for the goals, but Shinji Kagawa had a brilliant game. Augsburg are having an awful season, having historically made Europe last term. But Dortmund looked brilliant, and that change, Thomas Tuchel has come in, and in any other season, they'd probably be a bit closer to Bayern, who are 7 points ahead of them. But I just wonder. They also had Henrik Mkhitaryan back for that game. He missed the trip to Kabala due to safety concerns, him being Armenian and the historic things that have gone on between those two countries. So that was a shame, but terrific. He's another terrific player. And you just wonder with Dortmund, I think, if Bayern are going to win the league, Dortmund are already 4 points ahead of Schalke, if that second spot becomes safe, Champions League qualification is done, maybe they look at the Europa League and think, okay, we are really going to go for this, try and win it. They've reached two finals, lost them both. That would be a pretty good year if you got Champions League qualification and won a European trophy.
Chris, Borussia Mönchengladbach in Manchester City's group got a great draw at Juventus in the Champions League, and they faced third place Schalke at the weekend. What was the final score in that one?
Well, they won 3-1, and Andre Schubert has won five in a row. Remember, Lucien Favre stepped down after losing five in a row to start the season.
I mean, this is extraordinary. He's still interim coach, I think,
he is,
as well.
Yeah. I mean, what more can he do?
Yeah.
Extraordinary, yeah. And good goals. They're up to seventh, which, considering they were bottom of the pile and really their hopes of a top four finish looked over, albeit very early. They're back in contention for that now. And if they carry on winning, who knows what they could do.
And there was a really bad tackle in this game because Andre Hahn had to go to hospital after a challenge from Johannes Geis, the Schalke midfielder.
Yeah, sent off. It was a really nasty one. One of those right foot on the leg. Just horrible to watch. You even see the pictures and you wince. He's out until the new year at least.
Oh, is that what they're saying now? Yeah. They're saying he's out to the new year.
I'd imagine Geis will have a fairly lengthy ban for the challenge.
Elsewhere, Frankfurt and Bremen ended awful winless runs with victories at Hanover and Mainz, respectively. Wolfsburg won again to move up to fourth. Caligiuri, a player you like, Chris, with the only goal of the game, with a win at impressive newly promoted side Darmstadt. Chris, how's the Bundesliga table looking now?
Well, Bayern, 10 wins from 10, 33 goals for, 4 against. It's astonishing goal difference of plus 29, let alone their 30 points. 7 points clear of Dortmund in second. Schalke, 4 points further back in third. Then come Wolfsburg on 18 into the top four ahead of Hertha and Bayer Nürnberg Leverkusen. German Cup this week and a mouth-watering tie. Wolfsburg against Bayern, which is the pick of the ties.
And Lewandowski scored 5 last time in that game.
Yes, he did.
So that should be very interesting indeed.
He did. And just a note from Guardiola, because before the game this weekend against Köln, he was asked whether he had one eye on the Wolfsburg Cup game. And he said, no, Women can multitask, I can't.
Also, if you're especially into German football, we strongly recommend the Talking Fußball podcast.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
Joining us now is 442 and goal.com football journalist Elliot Rothwell. Elliot, thanks for making your debut on Football in Europe.
No problem. Great to be here.
Mate, we've got to talk about Fenerbahçe Galatasaray because Turkish football is one of your areas of expertise. Just how special is this derby for people who don't know in the wonderful city that is Istanbul, and I think you used to live there.
Yeah, I was there for a year, about 2 years ago now. It's really incomparable to any kind of derby that we have in Western Europe, really. I mean, the passion that they have for the fixture is kind of out of this world. The build-up begins around kind of 2 days, 3 days before the game, where the flags come out on every street corner of Istanbul. And you'll see neighborhoods kind of divided, completely divided in terms of orange and gold or gold and blue. And from then on, the atmosphere is ramped up until the game kicks off and every bar in Istanbul will be filled with people, because over the past few years, there haven't been any away fans allowed at the games because of a number of incidents over kind of the past 5-10 years. So really, the away fans all congregate together in different parts of the city, and it just makes for a magical atmosphere, really, over the course of the weekend.
And of course, you have that thing, I guess, Galatasaray on the European side of the city, Fenerbahçe on the Asian side. What happened then in the actual game?
Well, it was a bit of a feisty one, as it usually is. I mean, Galatasaray haven't won in Kadıköy in 16 years, I think it is. 1999 was the last time that they won there. So really, you'd think that a point for Galatasaray is a good result, but obviously whatever happens in any game, including Galatasaray and Fenerbahce, managers both come in for criticism. So Vitor Pereira is coming for criticism for negative substitutions. He took off Van Persie when they were 1-0 up, but he's kind of lashed out at his players because the score of the equaliser, Olcan Adin, is about 5'8", 5'9", and he was being marked by Joseph D'Souza, who's a recent recruit this summer, who's actually a very good player in defensive midfield. And that was in, I think it was after the 85th minute. So he pops up at the back post with a header from a Wesley Sneijder corner. And Vitor Pereira has come out after the game and just said it's a ridiculous goal. He's only a half-heighted player, I think is what he said. and there's a picture, a great image of Vitor Pereira just lambasting Joseph D'Souza after the goal's gone in. And in the first half, it looks like Fenerbahce were going to run away with it. I mean, Diego Ribas scored a great goal to put Fenerbahce 1-0 up. But after half-time, it kind of fizzled out, really. It was more feisty than really any real quality. And I think looking at the starting lineups on paper, there's no way that Fenerbahce should not have won this game. I mean, they had Van Persie was up front, and the three behind Van Persie that they had is absolutely remarkable quality for the Turkish Super League. I mean, there's Nani, Lazar Markovic and Diego Ribas, which is good enough for most leagues in Europe, never mind just the Turkish Super League. So really, with the squad that they had out, they should have been winning that game. But Galatasaray under Hamza Hamzoglu always flattered to deceive, but then seemed to grind out a result from somewhere without ever playing well. I mean, I can't really remember the last time Galatasaray actually played well, but they're there second in the league and just a point behind Besiktas. It's they seem to always get a result.
And tell us about Van Persie, because a lot has been made of the fact that he's not happy at Fenerbahce. So what's the story?
Well, I'm not really sure. There's been a lot of different whisperings. I mean, it was notable yesterday, Turkish television zoomed in on Van Persie when he was brought off, and there was kind of a high 10 between him and Vitor Pereira as he went off, which was obviously a very kind of marked gesture to the camera and to people watching. He obviously, there was that image that went out a few weeks ago of him looking absolutely miserable, sat on the bench. And I don't know whether there's any kind of whisperings that he's struggling to settle into life in Istanbul, which I think would be quite hard because it's such a brilliant place. He obviously, a player like Robin Van Persie is not happy when he's on the bench. But his form really hasn't been terrible. I mean, it hasn't been great, but it's not been awful. I mean, he started 5 games and he scored 4 goals. I mean, albeit he's made 9 appearances altogether. So it's not a horrendous ratio, but he really hasn't sparked into life the way that a lot of people thought he would when he went out there. And there's also the issue that over the summer as well, Fenerbahce signed Fernandão, who was the top scorer in the Turkish Super League last season at Bursaspor.
So do you think he's in decline, as many people have speculated?
He must be in some level of decline, given his age, given the fact that he wasn't terrific with Manchester United last season. I mean, if you were very, very harsh, you can argue that he's only had two kind of stellar seasons in his career, his last season at Arsenal and the title-winning season with United. But he's still a useful player. He's still technically brilliant. He still looks fit. He's not been injured yet this season properly. But I would imagine he'll end up with 15, 20 goals at the end of the season.
One man who's not in decline is Hulk, and I know you watch a lot of Russian football. He's been exceptional, hasn't he, for Zenit this season? I saw a stat, 10 goals, which is what you might expect, but 13 assists, which is remarkable, and it just goes to show how important he is for Zenit.
Yeah, he's been in absolutely ridiculous form this season, really. I mean, especially in the Champions League, he's caught a lot of headlines as well, because I think that's where a lot of people get to see him play for Zenit. Not a lot of people really catch Zenit's games in the Russian Premier League, but he really is just a phenomenal player. I mean, he's working under probably his favourite manager in Andrei Villas-Boas, and he's just kicked on really this season. And he's absolutely adored at Zenit. Their social media accounts are quite funny and quite interesting to follow. They put out a video a few weeks ago of kind of playing up to the Incredible Hulk tag, where Hulk would blast the ball towards the keeper, and the keeper would be carried by the ball and burst through the back of the net and things like that. And he really is a hero at Zenit. And he's also working well in tandem with Artem Zuber, who's gone there this season from Spartak. He's been on fire this season, especially this month. I think he's got 8 goals just in this month, Zuber. So they've been working really well up front together. And it kind of, with those two back in form and in such brilliant form, it's a good omen for Zenit to get back up in the Russian Premier League and try and match CSKA, and with a fantastic Champions League form, which has been a bit of a surprise so far this season.
If we can talk about AVB, I did the game when the one before that he said when he was leaving, and he shoved the linesman and he got a 6-match ban. But since then, it seems to have gone well. We know he's leaving in the summer. Where do you expect him to go? And do you expect Holt to follow him? I don't know. You mentioned there that they seem to have this excellent partnership.
Yeah, I mean, it was an odd one when AVB kind of had the outburst after the Krylia-Sovetov game when they got beat in September. That oddly seems to have acted as quite of a catalyst for their improved form, really, which is not usually how it goes when a manager has such a public outburst and such a public kind of admittance of defeat, and that he doesn't really know how to change the sides. Since then, they've had the games in the Champions League where they've been brilliant against Lyon, especially, and Valencia. And it seems to have gone from strength to strength since then. I do think he will leave in the summer, no matter what happens. He's not settled into life in Russia particularly well. He still does most of his interviews, or all of his interviews, with the Russian press with a translator, which hasn't helped his relationship with them. I mean, he obviously had quite a frosty relationship with the English press when he was at Chelsea and Tottenham, and he doesn't really have seemed to have gotten over that and improved on that level in Russia. And his family still live in Portugal. They never moved to Russia with him. And around the Krylia-Sovetov game, where he had the outburst, his wife gave birth to a new child, and he'd been back to Portugal to obviously meet the child. And I think that played into part of the frustration and the anger that he had with what was quite an innocuous decision that was the catalyst for his outburst. So when he leaves in the summer, I don't really know where he'll go. Portugal would seem the most obvious choice back home. I can't really see him going anywhere other than Porto, though. Or Spain, which is close to home as well, if he's bringing up a young child and a young family. So it will be interesting to see where he goes in the summer. Obviously, it will depend entirely on the jobs that are available.
And Elliot, finally, in a weekend of derbies, there was a Dynamo Moscow against Spartak Moscow at the weekend, a game that Spartak won 3-2 with a 90th minute winner. But there was another interesting story that you were telling me about over the weekend from that game.
Yeah, very bizarre. I mean, the game was good in itself. Quincy Promes scored twice to give Spartak the win in the last minute, as you say. A Spartak Moscow fan kind of wandered onto the pitch, and you can see from videos, it's all over the internet. He didn't really look like he knew what he was doing there. He was kind of just stumbling around, didn't look to be causing any harm, wasn't really trying to get into any players' faces or do anything like that, abuse anybody. And the Dynamo Moscow stadium announcer, Dmitry Derenets, kind of just charges over to him, lamps him in the face, and then like grabs him. Another guy comes on to help, and they kind of set about escorting this fan off the pitch. What the Russian press and a lot of people who have obviously reacted negatively to this incident are focused on is the last bit of it, which is kind of Derenets completely humiliating the Spartak fan by, as he's being dragged off the pitch, just as they get to the touchline, Derenets just boots him in the backside, which is seen as a real act of humiliation for this fan. And that incensed the Spartak fans no end, and they started throwing lighters and bottles and whatever they could at Derenets. And it really was an unwise move from him. It just blew up the whole game, and ultimately Dynamo lost as well.
Russia doesn't disappoint, does it, Elliot, for never. Stories? Never, never. Elliot, thanks for coming on the show for the first time.
Thank you.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Chris, time to quickly round up the other stories we have from the weekend. Tell me about Dirk Kuyt's latest goal-scoring heroics.
35 and in the form of his life, Rob. Hat-trick in a 3-1 win against AZ for Feyenoord. Remarkable, really. He's now scored as many league goals as Messi and Ronaldo put together. Now, I know Messi has been injured, but still, it's astonishing form for Dirk Kuyt, who's back at Feyenoord. He's loved wherever he goes, let's be honest. He's that type of footballer. Fans adore him, and he's very much doing the business. Really good title race as well in Holland at the moment. Feyenoord, joint top with Ajax, 25 points, and PSV, only 4 points back. So the big three, the big three clubs are all there or thereabouts.
Two hat-tricks in two games. Incredible from Dirk Kuyt. Anderlecht have had a great few days. They beat Tottenham in the Europa League. And then on Sunday, 3-1 winners over rivals Club Bruges, Dennis Praet. We'll be hearing a lot about this guy. He's one of Europe's top young midfielders, and he scored in that game.
Well, the season's almost over, so it's going to get a lot colder in Molde.
Oh, wow, very good.
Yeah, thought that one when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took charge. He made it 2 wins out of 2 this weekend against Alessund. Interesting time to appoint a new manager, I think, just before the season's ending. He's going to have a lovely winter break where he's going to be getting paid money to who knows.
I suppose he can be building for the new season, can't he?
Get good planning for that. But yeah, just a word on Molde as well. In a group with Ajax, Celtic and Fenerbahce, it's Molde who lead the way. In the Europa League, 5 points clear of Ajax and Celtic with 2 games to go.
Wow, you'd have thought they would be the whipping boys of that group. In French football, Djibril Cissé has retired. You may have seen he needs a hip replacement. And the former Liverpool striker says he now has to listen to his body. Meanwhile, Mathieu Valbuena at Lyon has taken to social media to apologise to Cissé after he was questioned by police in relation to an alleged attempt to extort money from Valbuena. It was a really strange story. Reports say that Cissé actually warned Valbuena that a blackmail attempt was coming over, let's say, a very private tape. And Valbuena has thanked Cissé for his support. But a truly bizarre story in what is turning into a bizarre season for Olympique Lyonnais. Chris, other derbies this weekend?
Yep, just to wrap it up in Vienna, 2-1 away win for Austria Vienna at Rapid with a last-minute goal. It really was derbies all over Europe, including, of course, in the Premier League. And just finally, Kazakhstan, which is
We've often neglected the Kazakhstan League.
We must do a special on Kazakhstan. but yeah, Astana, of course, are in the Champions League. Historic first-ever group stage appearance of Kazakhstan. They rested half of their first team for the away trip to Atletico, because they pretty much had a title decider at Kairat Almaty.
Big gamble
in the foothills of the Himalayas. They won. Goal to nil away from home.
In the foothills of the Himalayas.
That is actually true. So 2 points behind Kairat now with a game in hand, 2 to play for Astana. And of course, it's not just about winning the league, but that is the one Champions League place as well.
Chris, what have you got on this week, mate? What's going on?
Football League, actually. I always enjoy a trip to the Den. And it's for Millwall against Doncaster, which surprisingly was called off a few weeks ago due to international call-ups.
Wow, and I'm off to Dulwich Hamlet for the first time, the non-league hipster football sensation.
Good Lord, that could not be more different.
I don't know, I suppose going to Sporting Benfica might have been a little different.
Oh yeah, but I'm just talking about in the same city and in those two clubs.
Oh,
I don't reckon many people that go to Dulwich Hamlet would go to the Den. And I don't reckon many people that go to the Den will go to Dulwich Hamlet. I might be wrong.
You might be wrong, but I think you're right.
Chris, thanks for joining me on the show. Our new podcast next Monday.
This is Football in Europe.